So that morning when I woke up really slowly. Maybe you've experienced this before. It wasn't the jolting, like scared, terrified awaking that an alarm clock usually brings, right? It was kind of like slowly coming to the surface of consciousness. If you guys ever experienced that before, just like coming out of this deep, restful sleep. It was so restful that like I was awake before I even opened my eyes, right? And so I just laid there in bed for a moment, just enjoying just the comfort and the fact that I rested so well and I feel great. And I slowly began to open my eyes, and as I slowly began to open my eyes and they came into focus, I have really, really, really bad eyesight. And so it takes me a little bit to get oriented sometimes. And as my eyes kind of slowly came into focus, I'm laying there and I realize that I don't recognize that ceiling. And I thought, where in the world am I? I rolled over onto my side, and as I did, across the room from me, there was a stranger asleep. And I was very, very taken aback. And it took me just a moment to realize that I'm in a new spot. And as I realized that, all of the memories from yesterday came flooding back, a long drive. Boxes and boxes and boxes going up and down three flights of stairs in the hot, August, humid Missouri summer. Getting everything packed and organized and oriented and hung up, and meanwhile getting to know a new roommate and also getting to know lots and lots of different people on the floor, and like here's my RAs and here's my RDs, and I don't really know what those two things mean yet, but it's okay, we'll figure it out later. And all of these memories came flooding back, and I remembered, oh, I'm in college. Officially. I've been waiting, waiting, waiting for 5 years for this moment to wake up for the very first time in my college dorm room. And I knew, and I know better now than then, that what I was about to go through for the next 5 years would be the most intense and difficult and inspiring refining process of my entire life. But when you wake up in a world that you don't recognize, it's pretty disorienting, right? Well, my name's Shane, and I'm the student pastor here at Washington Avenue Christian Church. And today we're going to be continuing our series through 1 Peter called Refined. And when you wake up in a world that you don't necessarily recognize, it can be a little bit jolting, a little bit terrifying, right? I don't know about you, whether maybe you can relate to waking up in your college dorm room for the first time, or maybe you can relate to waking up in your brand new house for the first time. Some friends of ours, Jake and Ob, who are on staff here, they just bought a house like last week, and so I'm sure like waking up, Ob, in your house for the very first time, you're like, where am I? What's happening, right? Samantha and I had a very similar experience as well. Maybe for you, it's not necessarily waking up in a new place, but a new situation. Maybe for you, it's waking up without your spouse in bed next to you for the first time. Maybe it's waking up and not having a job to go to for the very first day of your life. Maybe it's waking up, and you're used to waking up to the sounds of busyness and breakfast being made and children arguing and fighting, and all of a sudden you have an empty nest. You don't know what to do. Waking up in a world that you don't recognize can be a little bit jolting. I think that it's safe to say that over the past 3, 4 months, we have all woken up in a world that we simply don't recognize. Samantha and I, we have this show that we like to watch sometimes. It's called The Good Doctor. I don't know if you're familiar with it. We like it a lot. It's a great show. It's about an autistic surgeon. It's just a really excellent show, but we were really behind on that show. It usually airs from about January to April-ish, and we were really behind on it, and so we've started trying to get caught up on that. And it was on the DVR, and so, you know, normally we click through commercials, but the first episode that we watched aired back in January, and I was like, Samantha, wait. Let's watch the commercials. Samantha was like, no, that's dumb. Why would we watch the commercials? I was like, because these commercials don't know that the coronavirus exists yet. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like, every single commercial now is,
welcome to a new world. In this new world that we're all trying to figure out together, you can be secure and safe in the knowledge that Domino's has contactless delivery, right? It's like, hey, Domino's, I don't want you to touch me or my pizza when you drop it off. Never have, never will, right? Domino's and like the restaurants you can understand, but what really throws me off is like the car insurance commercials that are like, contactless delivery for your car insurance. It's like, cool, thanks, I can do that online. Don't even need to talk to a person really to do that. But I wanted to watch with Samantha just like commercials pre-COVID, right? Pre-COVID-19, that are just like normal commercials. She said, that's dumb, and clicked through the commercials. And we have not watched any yet, but that's okay. I'm still working on her. We've all woken up in a world that we don't recognize. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, 2020 has been difficult beyond just the pandemic and beyond just the political situation that we found ourselves in. The first few days of 2020 started rough when my grandfather had a stroke that he never really recovered from, and we buried him in February. And while we were trying to navigate all of that and back and forth from hospitals to house and having a basically newborn, we had a major plumbing issue happen at our house as well that caused us to actually have to move in with my parents for a week, but we left the dogs at home. And so now we're trying to go back and forth between three places. And then after that, COVID started happening, right? And right in the middle of that happening, I was in a pretty severe car accident that totaled my my daily driver. So I had to navigate insurance and buying a new car in a pandemic. And as soon as we kind of really felt like we started getting a handle on that, there was a pretty significant wind event that blew part of our fence in our backyard down. And as soon as we got that kind of semi-handled and situated a couple of weeks ago, there was a hailstorm that caught both of our vehicles outside, and it totaled my wife's car and did $7,000 worth of damage on my new truck, and we have to get a new roof and new siding. Welcome to 2020, am I right? Yeah. 2020 has been rough. So before we dive in too deeply, can I just ask real quick, how are you doing? Like really, are you okay? Friends, church has been weird, right? We can all agree and attest to that. But let me just tell you that we have a Stephen Ministry program here that is still operating. If you need, maybe I do, I don't know. Maybe if you guys need somebody to talk through, to pray through your situation with, man, call us. Don't try and do this on your own. So the question that I want us to look at this morning is, what do you do? What do you do in a world when you wake up in a world that you no longer recognize? And maybe I can answer that question with a story. It was still dark outside. But even though it was dark, there was this weird red, yellowish, orange hue as he opened his eyes. And coming into consciousness, he hears the screams. Screams of fear and of pain, of terror, but also screams of, take this over here and move this way and move this over here. And he knew that something was wrong, so Nero jumps out of bed, throws his blankets off, and he runs to the windows to see below him the city of Rome engulfed in flame, burning. And Nero knew that he had woken up in a world that he no longer recognized. History's not sure, but history kind of thinks that Nero may have started that fire. There's no way to know for sure, but we do know that Nero wanted to build this huge, opulent new palace, and he wanted to build it right in the same spot where the fire actually happened. And Nero was the kind of guy who would dress up in street clothes with a robe over his head and a mask on his face, and he would go down into the town markets and just stab people, you know, just because he thought that that was fun. So it's not beyond the scope of reason to think that Nero might be the guy who started the fire, but we don't know for sure. Here's what we do know. 7 days, that fire raged.
They could not control it. They could not contain it. They just had to let it burn. And as it burned, it destroyed thousands of years of documented history, thousands of year-old buildings and marketplaces and temples and synagogues, thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs and livelihoods and lives. And when the fire was done, when it had burned itself out, well, somebody's got to take the blame, right? And these detractors who knew that Nero wanted this specific palace built in this specific place and this specific fire had happened in that specific place, maybe it was Nero. So they start spreading rumors among the Senate and among the people that Nero started the fire. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But Nero knew that he had to get the heat off of himself. And man, those Christians are just so stinking annoying. Golly, like worship whoever you want. I don't really care. Rome, we don't care who you worship, but we do want you to worship us. We do want you to worship the emperor, and we do want you to worship the sovereign state of Rome. So long as you do that, you can worship whoever else you want. But these stinking Christians won't. So Nero shifts the blame from himself to the Christians. Dips them in tar, strings them up on posts in his garden, lights them on fire, and enjoys dinner with his friends while they burn to death. Wraps them up in animal carcasses and throws them out into the arena to be mauled and trampled and eaten by lions and tigers and bears and oh my, you know the rest. And I tell you that story not to say, this is how not to respond when you wake up in a world that you no longer recognize. But even more than that, I tell you that story to tell you that this is the context that Peter writes his letter. This is the situation that is happening right now as Peter writes his letter, 1 Peter. It was the first time in recorded history that there was systematic political persecution of the church. And Peter writes to his people, answering the question, what do you do when you wake up in a world that you no longer recognize? Christians did not recognize this world. They were used to a little bit of Jewish persecution, but for the first time in their lives, they are experiencing systemic political persecution from the Roman Empire. And here's what Peter says. Be subject, for the Lord's sake, to every human institution, whether it be the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but as living as servants of God. Honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Servants, be subjects to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and the gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if, when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if, when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. Jim handed me the preaching calendar for this series. And I looked it over and I saw July 5th and I saw this text and I remembered the headlines that we live under every single day. And I stood up and I marched to Jim's office and I opened the door. And you need to know that normally I knock, I did not. I walked into Jim's office and I said, Jim Shelburne, did you give me this date and this text at this time on purpose? He looked at the calendar, July 5th. He looked at the text, be subject to every human institution. He looked at the headlines and he laughed at me, said, nope, have fun. Be subject. It's a Greek word. It's Hupotasso. Let me read for you the definition so that I don't mess it up, because I think that it is pretty important to understand what it means and what it says. To arrange under, to subordinate, is a Greek military term meaning to arrange troop divisions in military fashion, under the command of a leader. In non-military use, a voluntary attitude of giving in, of cooperating, of assuming responsibility, and carrying a burden. You can boil it down this way: obey except when commanded to sin. Regardless of political party, regardless of if you like the person who's in charge, regardless of the morality or the Christian character of the person who is emperor, be subject. For your sake? No. For the government's sake? No. Peter says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be the emperor as supreme or to the governors that he has put in charge. And friends, yikes. Peter means here all forms of rightful human authority. Which brings me to talk about these little guys, right? I'm glad to see that most of you at least came in wearing them today. I am baffled by the fact that this little dude right here has become such a divisive political issue. I really am. I don't understand it. I don't get it. When the announcement came out on Thursday from the governor to wear a mask, I was really scared, because I knew that this was my text and that I had to preach this weekend. But I was also kind of excited, because honestly, he took the heat off me, right? The governor says it. Peter says, listen to the governors, so wear a mask. I'm trying to learn and understand how to lead and shepherd well, and so I wanted to just be as informed as possible as part of my personality type a little bit. So I was doing some reading and I was doing some research, and Jim and I were FaceTiming back and forth. It's like, oh my goodness, like, did you hear this? What does this mean? I don't know. We got to figure it out. Here we go. And while I was doing that, I made the mistake of going on Facebook. And I was a little bit snarky and a little bit sassy anyway. And there was a lot of people who were a lot of very not happy about what our governor issued and the statement that he said about this tiny little semi-inconvenient piece of cloth. Wear it. And oh my goodness, the people just went crazy, right? I don't know, you guys on Facebook, you probably know and understand. I was feeling a little bit sassy and a little bit saucy and a little bit snarky, and so I just, on a few of them, I just commented 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14. Left it alone after that, didn't say anything. Don't know if that was the best decision, honestly, but can't do anything about it now. Friends, please don't hear me saying that this is a single issue about whether or not to wear a mask, because it's way more than that. In so much as your government does not command that you sin, be subject to what they say. Peter does not say, in so much as your government does not command you to sin, support, like, be happy about what they tell you to do. No. Subjection does not equal support. You don't have to support it, but you better do it. Because non-subjection equals sin. And that's the irony of this whole thing, right? Like, in as much as your government doesn't ask you to sin, do what they say. And if you don't do what they say, you're sinning. And this is not just a Peter issue. Let me be clear here. Paul, Romans 13. Be subject to every governing authority, to the emperor who is placed by God. Jesus, render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's. John, multiple times. Pretty sure in Hebrews as well. Every primary New Testament author says something to the effect, be subject to the governing authorities. Which means for us Christians that rather than fighting and arguing and complaining about the legitimacy or the comfort or the necessity of wearing a mask, we should wear a mask. You know why? Would you like to know why? Can I tell you? I'm getting no response, so I'm going to keep going because I have the microphone, all right? For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. That word there, put to silence, it's not just like, shh, be quiet. Shh, it's okay. Phimao is the word there. And phimao means to put a muzzle on an angry dog so that they cannot bite, they cannot bark, they cannot growl, they cannot hurt you. If you want to protect your religious freedoms and liberties, do what the government tells you to do. I was made the mistake, I make a lot of mistakes, of watching the news the other day. Because I'm trying to be informed and I'm trying to understand what's going on, but basically, like, it's either like masks are stupid or you're stupid for not wearing a mask. And so, like, it's kind of a waste of time. But one little clip that I did notice was last week, our vice president, who's also the head of the coronavirus task force, was in our state, I forget where, probably Dallas, at a church last week. And there was video of him, like, in the church, and he was sitting right on the front row, and he was wearing a mask, right, which is great. But the commenter, the anchor of the news show, was just, like, frothing at the mouth, because how in the world could this vice president, the head of the coronavirus task force, sit in church, even though he's wearing a mask, and watch a 150-person choir neither social distance nor wear a mask? Friends, if you wanna shut the fools up, if you wanna muzzle the dog, if you wanna protect your religious liberties, then do what the government tells you to do. Subjection does not equal support, but non-subjection does equal sin. Peter fires off with these four little things. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. I just want to talk to you about that for a second because I think that it's really, really important. Honor, that word there is timao, to fix evaluation upon, to give an appropriate value to. He says, honor everybody, like treat everybody with honor, with respect, with the appropriate amount of respect. And then he levels up and he says, love the brotherhood. The love there is agape. Right? We know what that means of the four types of love. Agape is the most primary. It says, do whatever it takes. This is the sacrificial, in spite of, not because of, love. And then he levels up again. Fear God, phobeo, to treat with deference or reverential obedience. He's like, oh, and by the way, honor the emperor. Did you see the tier there? Honor. Love. Ultimate respect, but the honor, but the emperor, the guy who thinks he's God, just the appropriate amount of honor will do. Because the way that we conduct ourselves, friends, is a story of who we believe is in charge to a watching world. Whenever you wake up in a world that you no longer recognize, the natural reaction is revolution. It just moves in two directions. When you wake up in a world that you no longer recognize, either you want to be a part of and begin a revolution to take you back to the world that you do recognize, or to embrace the change and the chaos and move forward. Both are revolutionary acts, and neither of them work. If you say that you want a revolution, well, look at Jesus. Because living a godly life is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. And if you don't believe me, ask Peter. Verse 21, for this you have been called, because Christ suffered also for you. If you have a pen, if you have a highlighter, if you have a marker and a Bible, underline this next phrase, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to the one who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed, for you were straying like sheep, but now have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. Living a godly life is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. There's a lot of talk about revolution right now. Don't think that I forgot what yesterday was. I did not. Don't think that I'm not aware of the political climate in our country right now. I did not. But living a revolutionary life leads to mistakes. When all you care about is living a revolutionary life, you fall in line with every wave of revolution that comes. But when you live a godly life, you will have a foundation built that will allow you, regardless of the trending revolution at the time, to speak truth and wisdom and knowledge into the situation. I don't know if you know this. Jesus had not one, but two political revolutionaries in his 12 disciples. Judas Iscariot, that wasn't his last name. He was called Iscariot because he carried a knife. It's called an Iscarios. And only a small group of political revolutionaries carried these knives, and their purpose was to be small and quick so that if a Roman soldier got too close, or if I'm just like casually strolling by one, I can whip that thing out and stab you and have it back in the pocket before you even know. Judas Iscariot and Simon the Zealot. Don't think that Jesus didn't know what he was doing. Because here's what Jesus was doing. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, if anyone strikes you on your right cheek, turn to them the left cheek also. And if anybody demands from you your outer cloak, give them your undergarment as well. And if anybody demands that you walk with them 1 mile, go 2 miles with them. And he didn't just tell us that. Peter reminds us that whenever Jesus was reviled, he returned not with revile. When there was gossip about Jesus, he did not return with gossip. He prayed for his enemies, and he loved those who persecuted him. He literally said on the cross, Father, forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing. He carried his own cross. He wore his own crown. And he was stripped of every single piece of garment that he was given and that he owned. And it was gambled for at the foot of the cross. Not just to prove a point. And not just to forgive our sins. But to show us and teach us how to live in a world that we don't always recognize. And this political season that we're in right now, this political revolutionary time, it's going to end. And this nation that we live in, it's going to end. But this movement, this revolution that we are here celebrating today started 2,000 years ago with a man who said, I will not be a revolutionary, I will be godly. And that godly life established a kingdom that will never end. Amen. Living a godly life is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. I forgot to mention it, and it's super, super, super important, so I'm going to jump out of my outline here just a little bit, because I have to address the part about servants, because those verses in our nation specifically, but around the world for centuries, have been abused and used to justify slavery. The ESV translates it, I think, better as servants and not as slaves, but you guys may be reading slaves. And so I just want to talk about that for just a second. Peter is writing to the world that he knows. And in no way is Peter saying that slavery is okay. See, Rome, at its peak, had about 60 million slaves. Everybody was a slave in Rome except for like the political elite, because Rome's whole philosophy as the political elite in the world was like, why rule the world and do our own work? We'll have slaves that can do our work for us. So slaves, servants, think of it more as like really low-paid, underpaid employees, doctors and lawyers and entertainers and actors and housekeepers and teachers. All of these roles were considered slaves in the ancient world. So please do not mistake the fact, or do not misunderstand that Peter is advocating for slavery here. That is certainly not the case. Probably the best way to read that is employees. Employees, like, do a good job for your boss, even if he's a jerk. Because again, living a godly life is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. And so the question becomes, like, what in the world do you do with this? Maybe you wear a mask in public and don't complain about it. Maybe you pray for your president. He needs it a lot. Maybe you give yourself permission to question what the president is doing all of the time, or some of the time, because he needs that too. I feel like in this political climate and situation that we're in, and I'm not trying to make any overtly political statement here, but I really feel like there's a lot of times where this president specifically has been elevated to the status where he can't even be questioned or critiqued at all, and I've never seen that in a political situation before. It's okay to question. You just have to be subject to. So maybe for you, what being subject means, maybe living a godly life for you means allowing yourself to question what the president is doing. Maybe it means praying for him. I think that goes across the board. Maybe it means for you sitting down across the table with a cup of coffee from somebody whose skin looks different than yours and asking the question, what is it like to live your life in 2020? Because see, the beauty of living a godly life is this. Whenever you live a godly life, you are empowered to ask and answer, to talk about the types of things that are being talked about right here and right now. What does the Lord require of you, O man? Micah 6:8 asks and answers, to seek justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Friends, I truly believe that there is a portion of our society who have a legitimate complaint about a way that the portion of those people who were given to protect them treat them. I truly believe that. Not all of them, but a portion of them. This whole justice for fill in the name. What does the Lord require of you, O man, to seek justice? Friends, we know what justice is better than anybody. So let's seek it out. And when you do that from a godly perspective, you've got the foundation laid, like you can come to the table with mercy and with humility to listen and answer. Because living a godly life is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. And can you just imagine with me for a moment, if you will, just close your eyes if that's what it takes. Close your eyes and imagine with me for a moment what our world would look like if we let go of the idea of revolution and embraced the simple, boring, plain idea of living a godly life. The riots would not be riots. The colored community wouldn't have anything to fear, legitimate or illegitimate. The police force would not be questioned. All of us could live closer to peace and harmony in this world if the church decides to let go of the idea of revolution and hold on to the idea of living the life that God has called us to live with Jesus. Jesus, the silent shepherd, leading us. Father, help us to understand that living the life that you have called us to live, living a godly life, is more revolutionary than living a revolutionary life. God, help us to let go of the self-aggrandizement, to the mysticism of revolution. Help us to settle into and to be content in a life shaped not by political party, or whether or not we think that masks are a good idea or a terrible idea, but simply a life that you have called us to live, a life shown to us by Jesus. And maybe, doing that will protect the things that we care about and protect the things that we love and that we cherish here in this country, in this season. God, help us to be humble. Help us to listen. Help us to seek justice and to be merciful, God, because you are merciful to us. Thank you for the example that we have in Jesus, and it's in his name we pray. Amen.
Hey, family. We're so glad that you joined us for our podcast. Friends, if you'd like to talk to us about Jesus, or if you have prayer requests, please contact us through our social media or through our contact page on our website at www.wackonline.org. If you're interested in joining our church family, there are next steps on our website that we would love to go through with you. Friends, we're so glad you took the time to listen to our podcast. Remember that we're real people experiencing real grace. We'll see you next week.